Good afternoon, Muskegon.
Good afternoon, Muskegon.
I'm Chauncey Williams.
And I'm Tony Williams.
And this is What Do I Do Now, your guide to credit, debt, and planning for your financial success with 103.7 The Beat.
And it's March Madness or Magic. I don't know what you want to call it, Coach, but it's very interesting.
I don't have no bracket.
I know that's right.
I did three of them.
I did two. The one I got left, it is two teams, and that's Baylor and Gonzaga. Those are the two teams that I had left. But the rest of them, Ohio State.
Indiana. No, Illinois, I mean.
Illinois too. Yeah.
I liked this team, and I thought it was going to make a run. They did, too. Alabama. I really liked them. I liked them a lot. Yep. And I thought Jones was the leader, but Jones froze in that last game against UCLA. He missed all them free throws.
I know it, man.
He missed them layups.
It was a bad game.
Then the boy they put in, number three, he hit the three-pointer from half court. He should have been in the game.
Should have been playing. You know, and it's just – some nights you got it, and some nights you don't. You know,
I don't even think that dude played a minute. He put him in the game. He hit the three-pointer.
Hit the three. And I'm sure he's sitting there on the bench thinking, Coach, put me in.
Put me in. I can do it again.
Right.
Goddamn, UCLA just went on a run and killed him. But these teams that, like, Oregon State was impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Oral Roberts,
was man, impressive. Was a shot away. Man. From making a Sweet 16, man, and they look good. I like that young kid, man.
Number three, tough, high character. They say he only had offers to, like, other schools that didn't have basketball teams.
Okay.
Yeah, but, you know, I think he was a prep school type of kid, private school, something. And Oral Roberts the only one offered a scholarship sports.
Well, he made the most of it. And that's what's so fun about March Madness. Even during the year, we never get to see these teams, right?
Right.
But in the tournament, they get to showcase them, man, and we can see some talent that gets overshadowed by the media just because of the market, size of the school. But we know, man, there's some players out there, bro, that can ball.
Some players. USC was deep. They cut. They good.
Yeah.
Houston. I saw Houston several times. I was like, hold up. They can't be that good. They in the Conference USA. That's weak.
Right.
Then they start playing a tournament. I was like, okay. It's their problem. Yeah. Where these guys coming from? And then who else? Gonzaga, when they play Iowa in the beginning of the season.
Right.
And they beat them by like 20. Then they beat somebody else by 20. Then they beat somebody else by 20. I say, oh, they like a 5,000 students in Washington. Yeah. They smaller than the Ferris.
I just couldn't believe that until I got to see them. You know, I'm like you. I watched these scores, and it's like they're not playing anybody, right? They can't be that good, right?
Right.
But when you get a close up, they are solid. They're solid, man. They've been ranked number one basically from the start of the season, and they're on the verge of, running the table.
Like Bobby Knight did. He's the last guy to do it, man. Because UNLV did the one. They lost one game.
Yeah.
Yep, on that run that they went 34-1 when they lost by 2 points to Duke, which everybody still think that this a Las Vegas wager.
Right. A lot of money on that game.
That's right. So they're like, hey, throw this. So you already got one championship. I want to make some money on the second one. They didn't pay y'all on the first one. So I understand and I see it. But it's been some good basketball. On the other side, on the girls' side, I think Baylor got cheated the other day.
They did against UConn.
Yes.
Yeah, they should have called that foul, man.
It was on that girl's arms and body and everything.
Yeah, you just can't do that. If you know, you have the right now for the replay in college.
In the last 2 minutes, especially.
Yeah. You say, okay, let's go back and review this, man, because this is a critical game for this program and our integrity.
Because they've been beating him.
Yeah.
They've been beating UConn. So it was like it was going to be the third time in 4 years if they would have won that game.
Yeah.
So then now he would have been displaced in recruiting. See, a lot of times, like, oh, you'll mess our recruiting up. And people don't understand that. Like, certain games determine if a player is going to go to a school. So, like, this year, Michigan State lost a lot of recruits and picked up some guys.
Yeah, they did.
Because some guys, like, I'm top five, I'm five-star. I'm not going to Izzo because I see he's struggling.
Yeah.
Then some guys, three-stars and four-stars, say, I'm coming because I see now you need a player like me.
Yeah. And that's really where his expertise is developing those threes and those fours, you know.
Yep.
And you know now, you know, with the portal, which he don't particularly care for, but still, that's a part of college basketball, college football, where kids got that opportunity now to move around.
He just picked a guard up
he lost one and got one.
Yep. Because Rocket left.
Yep.
Rocket, he struggled.
Watts.
Yep. He was not a guy that fits into a system where he needs.
Right.
those post players and screens. He needs a motion offense where he can just go to work.
Yep. So yep. Sometimes you figure that out. So it's all good. You know, the way I look at it, it's all good.
Yep.
You know, one of the stories that I think from a local standpoint where you get beat in a tournament, right?
Yes, sir.
But when COVID takes you out like with Orchard View.
Yeah, that was rough.
That's a really punch in the gut, man. Ah. You know, they finally got a program that they think, you know, can make some noise, right? Get one loss, but yet tournament's a new season, and then COVID takes you out. So
since 95, I was a senior, and that team was exceptional. They had a couple guys that came from the Hikes, Brian Montanati and one more other guy. But that team was exceptional. That was a good team.
Yeah.
Brian Montanati was like 6'9", could play the point guard and the wing. Went to JUCO, became a JUCO All-American.
Okay.
Went to Oklahoma State.
And wow.
Played on the team, I think, made to the Sweet Elite Eight or something.
Okay.
Yeah, so they would follow. They had matched that team's
record.
Capacity. So you're like, man, they going to make a run like them because they lost in the regional, I think. And that was the best season in Orchard View history.
It's
going to stay there now because COVID. Because that boy, the Keontae Barnes kid, not that big, up, jumping jack, could shoot, could score. And hands down, it's a lot of underclassmen in our area. He was the best player.
Yep.
I give him to them. We got some young pups coming through at Muskegon and some other schools, but he hands down, the top senior he was. Yep. He was. Yep.
So we'll get the player of the year for the Muskegon area.
Yeah.
And deservedly so.
He deserves it. So. And they program, so it's like everything is highlighted. And I know Nick, the coach, and I remember Nick when he came aboard. He was at Mona Shores, and they got rid of him because he was trying to infuse diversity in the program. And when they got rid of him, he just came over to OV. And at the time, I was coaching at OV with the girls, and we was making a run. We just, like, won a district or something. And he was like, yeah, he seen us play one time. He said, I want to play like that.
Okay.
I was like, what do you mean? He said, man, he said, the culture and how fast y'all go and how free they play. I said, one day you'll get your chance.
Okay. You got it.
And he's there.
You got some players. You got to have players, too.
Yeah,
right?
But I look at that as that's Mona Shore's loss.
Yeah.
Yep. And I ain't hating, but I'm just saying that's where he came from.
It is what it is.
Game is game. Game recognized game, baby. One man's trash is another man's treasure.
That's right.
So you got to get credit where credit is due. Yeah, because
yep.
I think his uncle was coaching, and he got sick or something, and Nick stepped in as the head coach.
Okay.
Voluntarily, I was like, I'll do it then. And look at that. Yeah. Look at the blessings follow. So
yeah, maybe you'll get some more players next year.
Yep. And then at the local level, I know we weren't on air for a couple weeks, but I know the Big Reds was in the news, usually positive for sports, but this time it was officials and a coach. And we got all this other stuff going on in our climate. And you think, like, okay, COVID, we got Black Lives Matter, we got these diversity, we trying to a new president. And then we have pushback still. And trying to control citizens and people that are in spaces to be leaders.
That's right.
So the recent events with Coach Guy, that's, I always try to put myself in somebody else's shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember being on the sideline, and I was not the head, but I used to always be able to have insight and be able to say things in the game, but I never talked to the referees. And I can remember it was getting to the point at times where the referee was like, tell your bench to be quiet, don't say nothing at all.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, not to our players? So, because we used to point out things like, all right, they're not going to call that. Make sure you cut that off. Do this. So, the referee's taking that as personalizing. Like, no, we coach our kids on how to play with the conditions that you bring.
Right.
It was certain crews bringing certain environments and climate that we knew.
Yeah. Right?
If we go to a certain space, like a Grand Haven,
mm-hmm.
we was like, all right, at certain points, we're going to play defense with our hands behind our back. They're like, why, coach? I said, because it's going to fluster the coach, and she's going to look at the referee, and he ain't going to say nothing.
Yeah.
Because referee going to look their hands behind their back. What are you talking about?
Mm-hmm.
And I understand when Coach Guy got in the situation because the sideline is heated.
Yes, it is.
Because you spend a lot of time with your kids. You're in the heat with them. You're trying mm-hmm. to mold them as people. So when I saw the compassion on his face, and I thought for a minute, I was like, oh, no. Then I looked again. I said, no, if that was me, I understand. And it's just the hold back because Coach Guy is from the Hikes, and you know you get tried in the Hikes, and you were a Tiger. You done threw some blows. So.
Oh yeah,
I know he over in Big Red Country. He know how it feel to be in the heat and get
but
tested.
That's where he cut his teeth at, right?
That's right.
Yeah, that's where he learned the game.
So then when it come to squaring up, he know about that too.
Right.
So it took a lot. I know it took a lot to hold himself back, but then if he would have did something, what would it have been to kick back on him?
Oh, it would have been totally different. Trust me. You know, in the dynamics of basketball is that there's this interaction on a continuous basis between, because that referee that's working your sideline, you know, it's every few seconds you're going to have him in, you know, close proximity.
All the time he coming around. You know he coming. Right. Like, I mean, when he come by this time, I'm going to say this to him. That's what I used to do. When he come by this time, I say, man, watch that call in the corner. Like, you see what she doing, man. She grabbing. She 3 seconds in the paint. So it's like, then certain, and then you could tell if they feeling you or if they rejecting you. Right, be quiet. Get back in your box. Like, right. Hold up, man. I know you seen that, man. Come on, man. That's obvious. They doing it 3 or 4 times.
And that's part of coaching.
That's right.
Okay. That's a part of the coaching. And the part of officiating is, you know, as long as you don't cross that line, then he has that right to stand up and talk, be it to his players or his, or to that referee.
Yes, sir.
The line is neither one of us can actually physically touch, shove, or confront either one. That's a no-no from both sides of that situation.
That's why it's a coach's box. That's why it's a referee with a whistle. You got all the power.
He has all the power. And he has been, you know, teed up rightfully or wrongly. It has happened. And I think this season in itself was a very trying season. And there were situations where even me as a commentator felt that the calls were not being equally distributed. And as a coach,
yes,
your job is to try and balance that out. And an individual takes offense to that and want to challenge you. It's one thing to challenge you in a verbal manner, but in a physical manner, now we got an issue.
But then you can't do nothing.
But you can't do it because there are repercussions for those actions. And unfortunately, this situation made national news. I happened to listen to it on NPR.
That's right.
And, you know, I've heard some talk about, well, we took it too far. Well, no, it didn't go too far.
No, it didn't go too far.
That's not an individual decision. Okay, there's due process in everything that we do in life. And
or just brush it under the rug, Tony. No, that's nothing.
No, we don't do that. That's what's wrong with society today.
He's right. Okay. He's getting paid. He's a coach.
That's
he's
okay.
He's all right. He's making a living.
Yep.
He's not harmed by that. It's a physical game.
Yep. Well, he has pride, and he's a upstanding citizen, and he wants to be treated just like any other coach is treated.
That's right.
So how, you know, I didn't see no other coaches getting physically pushed or shoved this year.
Yep. Or I remember hearing this. This is funny. It's like when you see a brother that in the same situation you've been in. Come on, I gotta look out for these girls. You know how your girls can play. What that supposed to mean?
Yeah, I don't understand that comment.
But that's what I'm telling you. That's the leverage that's done with the people that's in the positions of power.
Not all of them. No.
It's some good ones. When I see certain crews, and I'm talking about not white, not black, when I see certain crews, I say, I already know how they gonna call it. Thank you. I'm glad they brought this crew for this game. It's going to be fun today, y'all. Y'all know what it is. Play the game right. Y'all know. You know, I know all three of them don't play.
It is, man.
They're going to call it ticky-tack today. Y'all know that.
Yep.
So, but when you bring that in and you consistent with whatever you do, when you see Kurt Adams come, you're like, oh, it's time to just play. You know, you're going to be able to say nothing to him.
Okay.
It's going to be some calls, miss. If Brandon Burrell roughing. You might get hit across the head, but the other team will get hit across the head too.
Right.
And Brandon's like, hey, I'm calling him. I'm keeping it fair.
I'm trying to keep it fair. That's all
so
you ask.
It's this crews that you know that's going to do what they're going to do, and you're going to be good with it. Like, that's how they call it.
Yep.
You see them doing it both sides like that.
You tell your players the same thing.
That's right.
That's how you do it, man.
But when you're inconsistent and then you're trying to violate human rights, that's not the way.
No.
Because now that man got to live with that. That's going to be on him. I'm going to say this. I believe in behavior therapy. He's going to have to have some counseling.
Oh, I would hope that comes out of this whole process.
He has to. Okay. And it has to be a restorative justice part with that referee.
Because you got to remember, the point where it got to the courts was not a Keith Guy call. He does not make that call.
No, he doesn't.
Okay. That call comes out of the prosecutor's office. They review the the information, the tapes, the transcripts, or what have you, to determine whether or not they need to move forward. That's not a Keith guy. He makes the complaint, but what happens from that point is not up to him.
Exactly. Okay? Right. Yep.
And, you know, we just hate to use the comparison of a George Floyd situation, where what happened to him, when you look at that individual, he thought it was okay what he did.
Yeah. But then look at the prior relationship too. So like they worked somewhere before.
That's what I heard.
Girlfriend. All some, see, sometimes people have personal vendettas against your things. And then I'm gonna say this. Coach Jai just succeeded someone in victories and wins.
Okay.
And what I've noticed being in this area, a lot of people have attended this school, mm-hmm. but their kids don't go to this school. They strong on, I love Mesquite Big Red football, I love Big Red sports. Where your kids go to school at?
Where you go to school at?
They don't. Your kids don't go to school here, but you went here.
Yep.
So then you got a complex with the situation. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Because if I got pride in a school, my kids gonna be there.
Hey, it's no different than employees, right?
That's
employees,
right.
You know, this good. This school system is good enough for you to work in it, but yet your kids do not attend this school. And that's by choice. You made that choice.
That's by choice. So then you have to live with that when repercussions and stuff come back.
You have to live with it.
And it's tough and it's rough. I know people got to make decisions. And I'm not trying to be in nobody's life, but I just know a lot of times it becomes toxic culture.
Yes, it does.
It does. So I'm going to leave it in that space and we're going to move on.
We use our whole
time
frame for that.
It makes you get certain kind of feelings. And it's like, it wasn't even me. I'm like, man, that's crazy. But it's you can see a reflection of yourself in the person that you've had a history of knowing as a person.
Absolutely, man.
Yep. Yeah. So what I have today is, I know we wanted to finish up the COVID bill, but before we start, I remember the presidential candidates, and one of them was Andrew Yang when he was trying to run for president, when he had a campaign, when they had the free-for-all, when everybody said, I'm throwing my head in. I'm running like, man. So one of his campaigns was giving everybody a, like this universal income, basic income, mm-hmm. so they can live off of. So guess what? They actually did this in California, Tony. So I know we left off talking about the House bill increasing the minimum wage. So I said, okay, what's a comparison of that? What would that look like? How would that affect people? So this is what they did, Tony. They said after receiving in California on universal basic income, paid off debt and got full-time jobs, right? Mm-hmm. After receiving $500 per month for 2 years, without rules on how to spend it, 125 people, so a case study,
right.
A sample.
Case study, yep.
In California, paid off debt, got full-time jobs, and had statistically significant improvements in emotional health.
Okay.
So let's look at that. How many, 52 weeks?
52 weeks.
$500, about $11,000 mm-hmm. extra on your income.
They're getting $500 per month.
Yep.
So that's only, you know, for 12 months.
Yep. About $6,000.
Yeah.
Yep, $6,000. So an extra $6,000
a year.
That you can pay off bills or debt with mm-hmm. a year. So I'm thinking two. So that's 12 from husband and wife.
Okay, gotcha.
So you got $12,000. So I'm married. So I think like if I get it good for me, she should get it too. Give her the $500 too.
That's a stimulus program.
Yeah. So I'm in that mindset thinking like that. So you got a couple that's getting $12,000.
Okay.
Right?
For the year. Yep.
They didn't quit their jobs. They went and got full-time jobs and paid off some debt. So my thing is, that's like lifting people up out of poverty. So listen to this quote. It said, the central idea behind this is to lift people out of poverty mm-hmm. with a guaranteed monthly income. Supporters say it gives people needed financial security to find good jobs and avoid debt.
Yep.
But critics have argued that free money would eliminate the incentive for work, creating a society dependent on the state. Now, I'm going to say this. No. Because where I grew up, and I'm going to share this on air, where I grew up, people got jobs and they had side hustles, whether it was legal or illegal.
Right.
And that's the truth.
That's the truth.
Because they hit the glass cylinder, either not having an education, mm-hmm. having a prior record, or just being in some type of generational void of poverty where they couldn't find their way out. So they're like, well, I know how to do breaks on the side. I know how to do this on the side.
Yeah, I do hair on the side.
Yep.
I cook
I know how to recoup. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm going to recoup an extra something. I'm going to have my job checking, and I'm going to have this.
Yep.
And that's just how people were taught the multiple streams of income. If we don't got 15, if we don't got a dollar, we're going to lose this 15 cent and figure out how to stretch it to a dollar.
Right.
And if I got another hustle I could do when I get off work, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
So that's how I looked at this, Tony. So.
And, you know, we always know that there's always been a discussion around generational welfare, right?
Yes, sir.
And there's always going to be a percentage that do possibly take advantage of that. But in the same token, you got to have another platform for these individuals to be a part of to move away from that generational welfare, right?
Yes, sir.
And that's what's missing. Okay, we, you know, free education, to go to community college. Right, that's part of the Biden administration.
Universal, yep.
Yeah, or skills, some kind of trade.
Credentials, yeah, they got that too.
You know, and that's the key to moving away from generational welfare. You got to have other options on the table available for those individuals. And currently, you know, the present administration or the past administration, we just really never seen that as a vital part of the economy.
No, it's
and I
like
think that's got to be changed.
Yeah, it's almost I like to use this word power hoarding.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to throw you something, but then I'm going to give myself something. But instead of really showing everybody a real format and a real plan, I say, hey, a lot of times when people say college, they're like, oh, I got to go 2 years, 4 years. No, they got, right now at Muskegon Community College, they got one-year certificates, 33 programs for one-year certificates that you can get free with a Pell Grant. Pell Grant pay for your whole credential that can hopefully walk you into a job that's paid between $20 and $25 an hour. Or some of them got the tech parts where you can walk into $50,000 at least.
Okay. But that's the incentive that's got to be put in place, which is missing. You know, I need to change gears for a quick second and we'll keep moving. But what happened in Georgia this past week is a prime example of what can happen in politics when they feel threatened by the majority of the population.
Oh, yeah. And so then I call it the haves and the have-nots.
Yeah.
So go into greater detail about what's going on in Georgia.
So the voting rights law that was passed with no partisanship behind closed doors.
You do whatever you want.
Basically took away everything that had been put in place in this past election. To the point where in Georgia, it gets hot, right? So there's always long lines, especially in the inner city. So people would come out and provide water, right, to individuals that are standing in line. That is now against the law, okay? Even if you chose to come in and bring them sandwiches or food, that's now against the law. And there was no more mail-in voting. And in order to vote, you got to have a driver's license or some sort of state ID. So basically what they've said is we want to restrict voting to the point where we can basically determine who gets to vote and who can't.
So now this is what you done did. You done got rid of the hood dude that ain't got his driver's license.
Yep.
You done got rid of the illegal immigrant that could possibly don't have no documented person that usually could vote.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So then you got rid of the felony too. The guy with the felony, I can't go over that neighborhood. They might try to pull me over. Or then I think the next thing is going to happen. Do you know how they switch around the districts?
Yo, yeah, redistricting,
man,
jerry-rigging. And you also take out the elderly, right?
That's right.
Elderly, you know, provides a certain, you know, segment of the population, and most of them vote, you know, early or absentee ballots. And they've basically taken that off the table, man, and gotten away with it.
Yep. Now, I see the vice president. She stepped in and tried to say that you guys can't move this like this. But then I'm going to say this, Tony, look. It's almost like, okay, you're going to pass your COVID bill without us. We're going to bipartisan this. We're going to take everything back.
There you go.
So it's like, tick for tat. Oh, you pass your COVID bill without us. Okay, yep. We got something for you.
Yep. Yeah. It's a lot has not changed.
How can
it's
people
like
get
Jim
along?
Crow, man.
Yeah.
It's like Jim Crow law.
It's like Jim Crow.
It is. And that's the design is, you know, and everything starts with the first state. Now, we're going to see what state tries to take it up next.
Yep. Okay. So then, you know, the new bill that's getting ready to come out, trying to make D.C.
a state.
Yeah.
To give them the right to vote. The people in D.C. does not have the right to vote, man, for the presidency. Ooh, this and is part of, have you ever seen a license plate for Washington, D.C.? It's called representation. What is it? There's a saying on their license plate. Participation with no representation. Yep. Something to that effect to say that, you know, why D.C. has not have been, people have not been able to vote. You know, so. But I didn't want to sidetrack, but I thought that was important.
No, that's good.
What we're talking about.
That go into the financial stuff and just, man, it's just a lot of things because.
Yeah, because politics always feed into financials.
Yes, it does. So looking at the, I know the pandemic response, and I was thinking about, okay, about $50 billion will be funded for coronavirus testing and contract tracing. Another $19 billion will go to increase the size of a public health workforce. Mm-hmm. And another $16 billion will go to vaccine distribution and supply chains. They're doing a great job, but they say hospital beds are still up 50% right
now. They're going up 50%. And the statistics is very interesting, where the previous waves that we've seen has been in the older age groups, the 65.
Now they say it's 20 to 29.
It's below, it's at 40 and below now. Where there's not, they're seeing this increase, this bump.
Oh, they've been hanging out though. They've been
spring break. Did you see spring break in Miami?
When they were
in
shooting
Texas?
People.
Yeah. It was crazy, man. Crazy. No mask, no nothing. And there's a lot of states that have taken away the mask mandate.
That make that money. Go on, get sick if you want to.
Yeah, that's what it is. We open for business. That's what Miami said.
Yeah, I got your hotel money. I got you this money. I got your flight. Go on, get sick if you want to.
Yep. You don't care about yourself. We don't either. Yep. Come on in here to the bars, fill them up, do whatever you're going to do, man. And it just got to the point where it was just out of control.
And all type of fighting and shooting, I heard. Scandals, I see.
They had to shut the city down, right? They put a curfew on the city, 6 o'clock in the evening in Miami. You got to shut it down because it was so much mayhem, you know. But, you know, we are not out of the woods by no stretch of the imagination with this pandemic, man.
Yep. So I know they got aid for state and local governments and transit, right? So the House law sets aside $350 billion for state and local government territories and tribes. And speaking of tribes, you know, another financial thing, the casino got approved.
Muskegon. I did see that a couple weeks ago. You know, it kind of got buried in.
Yep, it's in the state right now. It's at the state right now, so they about to go on and sign and stamp some things.
Yeah, but it's pretty much a done deal.
It's a done deal.
Yeah.
So what that's going to do to our climate and our community?
Well,
jobs.
You know, always that's been one of the selling points of a casino is jobs, right? But everything has a downside.
Yes, crime's going to go up.
Okay. It potentially could be crime, or what I see as a bigger threat is those individuals that cannot control their gambling.
Okay.
Where you got people that are just so compulsive, given this easy access to gambling, just going to create additional, you know, hardships for families more so than crime. And a percentage of that will, I think, result in crime. But the biggest one is going to be a demise of people's financial stability, if you will.
They'll put some signs up and some commercials say get counseling.
Well, on every night, you know, FanDuel's, MGM, BetMGM, since they went to this internet-based gambling in the state of Michigan, which has created hundreds of millions of dollars in additional revenue for the state of Michigan, but it also has created a lot of problem gamblers, okay, because they made it too easy to pick up your phone and tie it to your credit card, and I'm going to bet $500 on this particular game or what have you. Or you can actually do casino games. You can do poker. You can do whatever, okay? They've made it so easy. So think about what the state of Michigan has done so far.
Yeah, they made some money.
We're basically legalized gambling.
You're smoking and drinking.
We have legalized marijuana.
Smoking and drinking.
The numbers have been, you know, always legal. Alcohol sales are through the roof.
Yep.
And all these vices basically are
smoking and gambling.
Again, when we talk about politics and financials.
Yes.
This is an example and a formula.
Policy is coming down the pipe because they say if industry is gone, let's bring some of these industries that were illegal. And make them legal and make them where you at the push of a button. So we can get that money, get whatever you want, You can get it enhanced. Cause I even seen I've heard them even talking about consensual prostitution being legalized because they say they look like scams on the internet. So they're like, we got my way.
We're gonna regulate it. Yeah, we're gonna regulate it, and then we're gonna tax it. Okay, so they, you know, they looked at the state of Nevada and the kind of money that they generated.
They said, bring it out of Michigan.
The sin tax. And the state of Michigan is saying, hey, we've lost a lot of revenue over the years for, you know, if industries leave or the pandemic in itself shut down a lot of restaurants and businesses, what have you. We got to recoup this money in order to keep this state running. So there you have it.
So then I'm going to tell everybody this. Oh, it's legal. I'm good. So imagine now you drinking, you smoking, you gambling, and you trick-or-treating. And you think it's all legal.
Yeah.
It's going to mess your life up. I'm telling you.
Yeah. Those are the things that we used to hear about that took place on a Friday night or a Saturday night in the juke joint or whatever.
Somebody lost all they whole check.
Whole check. Now it's an everyday occurrence. Every day.
So by the time somebody get off work, they can spend their whole check on a Monday on one of them four.
On them vices.
So I'm Chauncey Williams.
And I'm Tony Williams.
And this is What Do I Do Now, your guide to credit, debt, and planning for your financial success with 103.7 The Beat.